The United States and its Western allies officially support democracy around the world. The desire to have lots of countries with a level of freedom is similar to ours, but in practice, our country stays friendly with other countries that treat their people poorly. There are many examples in the book, The Despot's Accomplice, How the West is Aiding and Abetting the Decline of Democracy. Brian Kloss is the author, fellow in comparative politics at the London School of Economics, originally from Minnesota. And Brian, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks for having me.
So you say the sky is not falling, but what has been the ebb and flow of democracy since the Cold War ended?
Well, we had a massive surge in democracy around the world in the 1990s. Latin America democratized in the 80s, then we had Eastern Europe and Sub-Saharan Africa democratize in the 90s. And now we're now in our 11th year of declines for democracy, with authoritarianism sharply on the march. And unfortunately, this trend is only increasing already under Donald Trump's presidency.
Well, let's go right there, because you do mention Saudi Arabia several times in the book, and we just heard in the newscast at the top of this hour Donald Trump saying that Saudi Arabia is the foundation of our fight against Muslim extremists. This just a day after Rex Tillerson, the Secretary of State, said that America First means decoupling U.S. foreign policy from values like human rights and freedom.
Yeah, I think this is an enormous mistake. One thing that I think really shines through in my research. I've traveled around and interviewed heads of state and politicians and pro-democracy reformers in sub-Saharan Africa, the Middle East, Southeast Asia, etc. All of them take cues from Washington. And what they are seeing is a president who has been harsher on Meryl Streep and Nordstrom than on El-Sisi, Duterte of the Philippines, Erdogan of Turkey, Putin of Russia, or President Xi of China. And that signal is very, very clear to them that they're starting to think, you know, if we torture some journalists, maybe Washington's not going to care. And Rex Tillerson's words yesterday were even more of that, where they said the U.S. is no longer going to worry about human rights when it makes foreign policy calculations. I mean, it's a remarkable change, because this used to be a bipartisan consensus. Reagan talked about Washington as the city on the hill, the beacon of freedom for the world. Democrats have had that viewpoint, too. And now we're talking about a much darker type of politics coming out of the White House.
But to be fair, Trump has been president for just a little more than 3 months. I mean, some of the slippage and the backsliding into more repressive regimes began long before he took office, didn't it?
Absolutely. So the way I use the analogy is I talk about the U.S. used to act more like a biased referee. We were very much imperfect. We didn't call penalties on Saudi Arabia. We tended to sort of turn a blind eye to any sort of strategic ally. And even in the Cold War, we actively toppled democratically elected regimes in places like Chile or Iran, or even in the Republic of Congo in sub-Saharan Africa. But now that shift is changing from a biased referee more to like a cheerleader. And this means that even though it's only been 3 months, the shifts are already taking place. I was in Bangkok a couple months ago talking to generals in the military junta, and they are already using Trump's presidency as a reason to justify their own authoritarian rule without elections. They're basically saying, we don't need to worry about this anymore, and they have postponed elections as a result.
Okay, so current situation aside, though, you point out in your book, there's an interesting line here, democracy has some innate flaws and dictatorship some innate strengths. So let's explore that a bit.
Sure. So one of the things that I think is a really strong part of democracy is the marketplace of ideas, right? So often the best ideas tend to survive and the worst ideas tend to sink. Now, this doesn't always happen, and we have quite a few examples in our own country. But over time, we tend to get it right. And, you know, one of the things that people take for granted about democracy that actually is a strength of authoritarianism is speed of reaction. So one of the best examples of this is when SARS broke out in China, that new disease in the mid-2000s, they broke ground on a hospital, a 1,000-bed hospital, on a Tuesday. And the following Wednesday, patients were moving in. I mean, this takes 8 years instead of 8 days in the United States. So even though there's some of those advantages to dictatorship, they come at the cost of the lack of that marketplace of ideas, the lack of inclusion, and the lack of stability that comes with it. I mean, one of the points I try to make is that we always seem to think these dictators are stable. But if you look around the world, the places that are absolutely catastrophic right now are places that used to have dictators, and they destroyed their societies. So, you know, Syria doesn't need another strongman. It had a strongman, and that's why it has a civil war. And so I think that on balance, even though authoritarianism has some strengths, they are much more outweighed by the strengths of democracy.
Our guest on the Jefferson Exchange is Brian Kloss from the London School of Economics. He is a fellow in comparative politics and the author of the book, The Despot's Accomplice, How the West is Abating and Aiding and Abetting the Decline of Democracy. You can join us at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. There have been times when things were democratic. Let's go back into the Cold War now, like in Iran with Mohammad Mossadegh, democratically chosen by the people, and yet the CIA overthrew him and placed the Shah of Iran back on the throne.
Yeah, and this is basically what I'm talking about with the development or the shifts that are happening now, is I'm worried we're going back to this approach. Back then, the really truly interesting thing was that since declassified memos from people like Henry Kissinger basically said that the worst thing that the U.S. could have was a democratic adversary. And what they meant by that is that if there was a genuine democracy that allied with the Soviet Union, that was actually worse than a dictatorship allied with the United States, because the democratic legitimacy of an enemy was hard to argue with. So in the end, what they tried to really stop were democratic enemies. And that meant that they actively intervened, and there were several CIA-backed coups in places like Chile or Iran, as you point out. And this was something that really tarnished the United States' image abroad. And it also has long-term effects. I mean, the amount of distrust in Iran as a result of that intervention is still lingering with us today. I mean, it poisoned the relationship for decades. So, you know, I think this is something where we have to be very careful. What we do in foreign policy that seems like a good idea now may very well be a bad idea in 5 years. And I think that's what we're sort of beholden to right now, is a short-term approach that thinks only about immediate strategic gains as opposed to long-term strategic gains.
In other words, security versus any level of freedom in the country that might produce a little more instability?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, we're very often thinking, okay, let's just cozy up to a despot or a dictator, and, you know, they'll provide us with oil, or they'll provide us with some sort of stability in the region, or they'll do our bidding in the United Nations, whatever it is. The problem is that only lasts for so long. I mean, I think Saudi Arabia actually is a very good contemporary example of this. You know, we are very good friends on the global stage with one of the most brutal regimes on earth that, you know, beheads people for not believing in God or for, you know, criticizing the prophet. And yet that regime is not going to survive indefinitely. I mean, it is already showing serious cracks. There is a lot of problems under that society that are being papered over by the royal family. And when it breaks apart, the question is, what side do we want to be on? Because the people of Saudi Arabia who don't like the government are going to remember for a very long time how crucial Washington was to propping up that regime. And so I think, you know, we're a very short-sighted group when we formulate foreign policy. And that actually, ironically, is a product of democracy itself, because our leaders have to think short-term. They have to think in election cycles. So because of the fact that we are a democracy, we end up actually paradoxically supporting some terrible regimes, because the long-term commitment to democracy abroad is much, much harder and pays dividends much, much later.
So a great example, though, in that same general part of the world where the Arab Spring uprisings took place and Egypt turned democratic. They turned Hosni Mubarak out, had an election, put Mohamed Morsi in the office of president. But then what happened?
Well, there was a counter coup in 2013, and President al-Sisi, who's effectively a military dictator, took power. I mean, I think, you know, one of the things with the Arab Spring that I try to stress with people, and this is true in Egypt, but it's also true in a country where I've lived for several months, which is Tunisia, just to the west, you know, which is genuinely a democracy now as a result of the Arab Spring, is that we have a really, really short attention span for democracy. If you tried to tell me in 1950 that Japan was not yet a perfect democracy and so it was therefore a failure, I would have said, well, it takes a little bit of time. You know, but here we are only 6 years from the Arab Spring, and already it's, oh, everywhere is doomed, right? This is never going to work out. You know, the American democracy did not happen in 5 years. The American democracy is an ongoing project. You know, this century, you know, last century, you know, women couldn't vote. We had civil rights struggles. So, you know, it's a constant work in progress. And I think even for the darkest corners of the world, they can rapidly transform if there's sustained pressure and support for them. And in Tunisia, where I lived, it's a place that genuinely has freedom. I interviewed torture victims from the old regime who, you know, were hung from metal rods for days naked by the former dictator. And now, you know, they're being recognized and they're able to speak out. Some will run for office. And it's a truly remarkably different country than it was just a few years ago. And that's why I, in spite of the dark tone of the book, to an extent, I'm fundamentally an optimist when it comes to democracy.
Our guest is Brian Kloss. His book is The Despot's Accomplice. Here's a call from Rebecca in Fern Ridge. Welcome to The Exchange.
Hi. I'm no big Trump fan, but I really wonder if it's not such a bad idea for him to go out and initiate relationships and talk to Duterte and just attempt to even make surface-level friends, if it's instead of just automatically writing somebody off, saying, no, we're not going to talk to you because you're not Democratic. And the really the speaker answered most of my questions while I was waiting on the phone. But I know that everything we do is short term and that democracy is a work in progress. But there's a lot of things that they can, third world countries can change. Do they really need our prodding? Is it really, does it ever really work? Really, I had most of my questions answered, but thank you.
All right, thank you, Rebecca. Appreciate that. So Brian, what is the approach you think would work best here to encourage democracies and to discourage the repressive regimes?
Sure. Those are absolutely excellent questions. For the first one, I actually think that Trump is right to engage with people. I have no problem with diplomatic overtures to bad regimes. And that was something that Obama tried to do and was criticized for. What I have a problem with is how he talks about them, because that signal is not lost on people. So when he says he would be honored to meet Kim Jong-un, that's a really different statement than saying that, you know, we have a real threat here and we need to sit down and play hardball with this guy, right? When he says that he admires Putin, or that President Duterte in the Philippines, who's using death squads to kill thousands of people, when he says that's the right way and he's doing a good job, that's fundamentally different from engagement. And the other aspect that he's doing badly, I think, is that there's always that second part to a statement with the U.S. So we very regularly say things like, you know, we have a strategic relationship with Saudi Arabia, but we also criticize their terrible record on human rights. And that second part is really crucial because it says we don't endorse this. And it actually does matter because, you know, we talk a lot about places like Syria and North Korea, but, you know, 7.45 billion of the 7.5 billion people on the planet don't live in those two countries. And everybody else is taking cues. When I've interviewed presidents and prime ministers, they really do look at Washington to figure out what they can actually get away with. I mean, I think it's astonishing when I've traveled to places like Madagascar to realize that what's going on in Washington is front page news in that country. You know, I mean, I think we take this for granted as Americans. But those statements, that behavior, that diplomatic positioning in the West, it's the only policeman that stops these things, because otherwise, you know, the rational thing for these regimes to do is simply to rig elections, jail their opponents, and torture journalists and dissidents. And I'm worried that that's going to happen a lot more. So I think the strategic engagement needs to happen, but it needs to have a much harsher and more sustained level of pressure on human rights and democracy.
And certainly more careful words, it sounds like you're calling for as well.
Absolutely.
All right. Brian Kloss is the author of The Despot's Accomplice, How the West is Aiding and Abetting the Decline of Democracy. Brian, thanks for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.